south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, you know, the other day I was talking about expat Eddie stories, right? Haven't had those in a while. I promised to get to a few choice ones. But I do remember this one. Boy, it just popped into my head today while I was working out. You know, it happened around Halloween. I know it's not the season. It's not near Halloween, though it is approaching rapidly, right? Anyway, we both happen to be in Costa Rica. And, you know, since Costa Rica is just filled with gringos, they celebrate Halloween quite heavily because everyone's on vacation, right? And the hotels and the beach bars all have Halloween parties. You come in a costume and they give out prizes, you know. And some gringos and expats, because Halloween's a big thing up in the States, go all out in their costumes. Even if they're on vacation, they'll go to used and vintage clothes stores and buy tuxedos, top hats, band uniforms, and go as Michael Jackson, that kind of stuff. And this incident happened before The Walking Dead. I mean, these days, 80% of people go to Halloween parties as zombies. Ooh, how creative and scary. Brilliant idea, huh? Anyway, Eddie and I made the rounds to various Halloween parties at hotels in San Jose. We were in town. We weren't doing the beach thing. That's about 2.5 hours away. And because of all the gringos, Halloween parties were big. Now, we were reading at the last minute. In the Tico Times, that's the longest-running local gringo tourist rag. By the way, if you go online and check that thing out, you can see how really expensive the real estate is in Costa Rica and everything else. In fact, I got an email from a gringo about 2 months ago saying, hey, it's more expensive than New York and Costa Rica. Oh, no. You know, like $6-7 for a beer. Who'd have thunk, right? That's gringo tourist trail all the way. Of course, if you go out in the boonies where there are just a few gringos, I mean, they're everywhere, but out in the boonies in towns of maybe 3,000 or 4,000, there's no real action for gringos, so you don't see too many of them. And you can find a tienda and get a beer for $2. But where were we? Oh, yeah. So Eddie and I are looking in the Tico Times, and there has to be at least 15 bars and hotels, etc., advertising Halloween parties and prizes for the best costumes. And being it was last minute, we weren't prepared. We had nothing special for costumes. It's usually the women who go all out for that kind of stuff. I mean, look, in most Latin cities now, they've got a number of theatrical stores that rent costumes and such. And we did stop into one of those places. They wanted something like $50 to rent a Hulk or Batman costume. And they were handmade. Looked like they were silkscreened on baggy long johns. I mean, come on, there's nothing worse than a limp-ass Superman, Batman, or Spider-Man costume, huh? So we nixed that. I figured I'd go cheap and dirty. Had black pants, black shirt. Turned the collar inside out and did my favorite Catholic priest imitation. I do a good one, you know. Hey, I know it's not original, especially in a Catholic country, but you carry a Bible around with you and a rosary, and man, I'll tell you, it works wonders at airports and land borders, too. So it took me all of 10 minutes to work up my priest getup, and Eddie is looking through his closet, and he comes up with a Superman t-shirt. Now, just a t-shirt with a big S on it, right? He dons it, puts a white shirt over it with a loose tie. He had some cheap sunglasses with a dead black frame. He popped the lenses out of them, combed his hair nicely with a little curl hanging down on his forehead, and guess what? He looked just like Clark Kent, I'm telling you. So, you gotta picture this. We'd walk into discos and hotel Halloween parties, me as a Catholic priest with a Cohiba cigar, and Eddie with his white shirt unbuttoned, tie hanging, his shirt pulled way back at the buttons, in that classic pose everyone knows when Clark Kent is just about to jump into a phone booth and turn into Superman, you know? Come to think of it, these days there are no phone booths for Superman to change. Anyway, with Eddie, it was perfect. You see the S popping through the sort of crinkled white shirt. And for the topper, he had a piece of red tablecloth tucked in the back of his pants, so it looked like his cape was starting to hang out. And you know, we hit 4 or 5 places, and everyone was cracking up when they saw Eddie. And you know, there were gringos who spent a lot of time and money on the usual suspects, papier-mâché heads and dicks. Yeah, you ever notice there's always a dick or two at a Halloween party, in more ways than one. But Eddie was the one getting all the attention. He was cracking people up. So anyway, we figure, hey, Eddie's got a chance to win something here. And most places are giving away bottles of booze, kayak and water rafting trips, even beach hotel weekends. But one hotel, I think it was the Del Rey, the top prize was a $500 credit at a really nice restaurant in downtown San Jose, and I forgot the name of it. Anyway, wouldn't you know it, Eddie won. Of course, we had a really good rooting section when the judging began, plus both Eddie and I knew one of the judges. Little pull there. So anyway, a couple of months went by. I said, Eddie, by the way, whatever happened to that $500 restaurant thing? Now, remember, Eddie lives in El Salvador, but he had a restaurant or two in Costa Rica at the time. He said it was great, Johnny. Claudia and I went there about a week after I won, and we spent something like $85. Then he said we went back about a week later, and guess what? The place was boarded up, out of business. I think he said that was the plan. Hey, this is Latin America. You got to expect the unexpected. Now, I have to remind you that this Halloween thing here in Latin America is very new. It only really caught on here maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Before that, it was more or less frowned upon, like a satanic holiday. We're talking about very Catholic countries here. And it really was the gringo tourist who spread the word, you know. By now, pretty much all the Latinos have gotten into the act. And you heard me say in a past show, they even trick-or-treat down here, but only in gated, guarded communities. By the way, are there laws against trick-or-treating up by you? It wouldn't surprise me one bit. So anyway, Halloween has caught on. You know, Latins, any reason for a fiesta, and Halloween fits the bill nicely. In fact, you can probably expect soon enough they'll be making it a national holiday, you know, another day off. What's that make it now? 5 workdays and 360 holidays here in Latin America? Just kidding, but it seems that way, you know. Now, you might be wondering, why did I bring up that story at all? Especially now, a couple of months before Halloween. Well, it's just another really good life example of less is more, which is why it's never a good idea when you finally get down here to Latin America, get that plan B going, to start accumulating crap like you did up in the States. Man, I can't tell you how many emails I get from people saying, Johnny, you know what? I really think I gotta ship a container down. I got so much stuff and I don't think I can buy it down there, or it's gonna be too expensive. And you know what I say? By the time you count up the expenses to have a container ship, plus the insurance and the taxes on the stuff you'll bring into the country, you're looking at $5,000 to $8,000. And I'll tell you, once you land here in Latin America, if you can't outfit your house or apartment down here with all the basics, first world style, on $5,000 to $8,000, man, you'd better postpone the trip and brush up on your math skills. Now, I have a much more serious and in-depth expat Eddie story about love, romance, mating, dating, and stupid gringos in love. That'll be coming up in the next couple shows, but got some more things to talk about right now first, so... All right, here's some breaking news out of Ecuador. A lot of people love Ecuador, you know. It's on International Living's top 10 hit list for the best retirement places in the world. But did you know, former President Correa, the guy supposedly responsible for turning Ecuador around after it was bankrupt and his currency turned to crap, according to an article that just came out in Panama's biggest newspaper, and I'll translate this, it's in Spanish, and by the way, you'll probably never get this news up in the States. It says the top FARC, that's FARC leadership... Remember those guys? They're the guerrillas that own the boonies out in Colombia and are in control of all those cocaine crops. You know, the FARC rebels and all that. Anyway, the article says, top FARC leadership contributed $500,000 to Rafael Correa's presidential campaign. According to testimony from top FARC leader, alias Chorizo, that means sausage in English, a former guerrilla top henchman of the FARC and now under the witness protection program in the Colombian justice system. He says, I mean, Senor Sausage says, that former Ecuadorian President Rafael Correa was financed by the FARC during his presidential campaigns and that he, El Chorizo, was in charge of the clandestine payments. So you're wondering, and I was wondering too, why would they even bother? Why would FARC give a damn about what's happening in Ecuador and the presidential race there, since the FARC is pretty much completely a Colombian-based organization? Well, the article explains that Alexander Chorizo Duque, a.k.a. Senor Sausage, stated that the deal was for FARC guerrillas to pass into Ecuador and vote for Correa during his presidential elections. The negotiated agreement whereby members of the FARC had indefinite permission to visit Ecuador, and the deal was directed at a certain FARC camp right on the Colombian-Ecuador border, but within Ecuadorian territory, so thousands of these guys could vote for Correa. And Senor Chorizo, Senor Sausage, testified the deal wasn't only for votes. Correa had to do something else once he got elected president. He was to immediately cancel the lease of a U.S. military base nearby, which they said interfered with their cocaine operations. Well, you'd think, right? But then again, the U.S. has always been into the drugs for guns thing, you know? Anyway, the article says, true to his word, when Correa became president, the first thing he did was to ask the U.S. to remove that military base. And he canceled the lease for that land. Then they quote Senor Chorizo, Mr. Sausage here. He says, quote, the funds in question were delivered directly to my house. One particular installment of $200,000 in cash and another $300,000. Now, the renowned Senor Sausage actually worked in Correa's campaign. And he's quoted as saying, I had to do the work for the campaign and the publicity, encouraging the people of Colombia who had Ecuadorian documents and FARC militiamen who had a free pass to go to Ecuador to vote for Rafael Correa. So what's that mean? Well, for all you gringos and expats who Rafael Correa was the best thing since sliced bread, I know. He's the one who pumped up the Ecuadorian social security system and healthcare system, offering gringos and expats to jump on board, remember? Well, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, all I'd hear from gringos and expats living there was praise for that guy. And now he's being revealed as just another corrupt president who'll do jail time. So what else is new, huh? Oh, and by the way, if you've been paying attention, you'd know, now that it's been thoroughly audited and vetted, the Ecuador healthcare system is bankrupt and pretty much on the skids. Plus, you longtime listeners will remember the discussion we had about how all the premiums for gringos and expats were jacked up dramatically. All right, just a little news out of Ecuador, stuff you'll never hear repeated by those international living doofuses. Then again, maybe you don't want to know about that stuff because I've known gringos who've lived on the gringo tourist trail for years, and they don't even know the name or even the face of the president of the country they're living in, which could be a good thing. Ignorance is bliss and all that, but look what's happening in Nicaragua right now. It's a place where clueless gringos have invested fortunes, and there's practically martial law there now. Sounds like a lot of clueless gringos never did investigate who's in charge. Now, normally when you've had a couple of socialists or neo-communists in power, like all politicians, they're as corrupt as can be, and as long as the money's flowing in, they're happy. But when they start tampering with the Constitution so they can remain in office forever, man, then it's not the kind of place I'd ever recommend for your plan B. All right, speaking of Nicaragua, here's some breaking news just today. Some 6,000 heavy cargo vehicles are trapped due to the violence and blockades that have intensified in the last weeks. Ah, sounds like fun, huh? All right, now a relevant email. This is from Kevin, who says he's gone to an international living seminar and, well, was kind of like a cattle call, he said. And all the little extra side presentations were about trying to sell you real estate, land deals, and teak farms. He said you almost never get out of the hotel unless you're going to look at real estate. So he's not recommending international living seminars. Anyway, he says, dear Johnny, you almost never talk about Uruguay anymore. It used to be all over the news a few years ago, first country in the world to legalize marijuana and such. Then they had that real nice old president. I think his name was Mujica. Looked like everyone's old grandpa sitting on a porch smoking a pipe, maybe loaded with good legal weed. Who knows? I remember reading, Kevin says, he used to drive to work as the president in a Volkswagen. And his wife, the first lady, would go to her job, wherever that was, on a scooter with no bodyguards. And then after his presidency, he settled back in his little farm where he did most of the work. The First World Press kind of touted him as a modern-day Lincoln-esque figure, chopping wood in the morning and in the afternoon, driving his Volkswagen to work, and spewing folksy populist tales that everyone loved. Remember that? I do remember some months ago you mentioned Uruguay once. You said it seems like their experiment with legalizing marijuana has failed because the government, as usual, thoroughly screwed things up. So my question, Johnny, is do you have any more to add to the Uruguay story? Because one of my friends went down there and settled in a rather upscale beach area called Punta El Este. And he says during the season, and they have kind of all four seasons, it's really jumping with Argentinos and terribly expensive. And the other half of the year, it's completely dead and you can rent a condo for a song. But when the season comes, the rents triple, even quadruple. I don't get it. Any insight on that? Keep on keeping on, Johnny. Signed, Kevin, Columbus, Ohio. But not for long. That's what he says. Good questions there, Kevin. And this might be a great time for me to read a little article to you on the state of exactly what's happening in little Uruguay right now. This is hot off the presses, too. Pretty much says it all. And it comes directly from a favorite of mine, Doug Casey, who actually owns a Uruguayan ranch. So He got down there well before they made marijuana legal, and he's kept a good eye on the economy, tourism, the government, cost of living, everything. So let's get on with it. And as usual, I'll paraphrase a bit every once in a while when I feel like it. When you get your own show, you can do what you want too. All right, starts out, most Americans have never been to Ecuador, and most don't know a thing about it anyway. It's nobody's first choice for a vacation destination anyway. And so the interviewer asked Doug Casey, why do you have a ranch in Uruguay? And Doug says, well, Uruguay used to be known as the Switzerland of South America. It once had the most free market banking and financial infrastructures and excellent privacy. It was once very desirable from that point of view, so I moved there. Besides that, many Latin Americans used it as a tax haven, too, and a money refuge. It still has remnants of that reputation, though no longer deserved. Then it goes on to say, Uruguay is a very small country. It's about the size of Missouri, with a population of only 3.5 million. It's also quiet and backward. When I first visited in 1980, I thought I was stepping back into the 1930s. I kid you not, he says. Geographically, it's kind of divided into three parts. One part is Montevideo, the capital. It's got about 1 million people in the center of economic activity, such as there is, and there's not much of it. It's got some upscale areas, too. Then he says, but for the most part, it's a dump. Yeah, I've seen it. He's exactly right. Anyway, then there's Punta del Este, a beach-slash-resort town. By the way, you guys, that's what the emailer Kevin was talking about. His friend moved there. Then Casey says, that town is packed in the season from Christmas to February, but very, very quiet the rest of the year. That's where all the rich people live, too. Exactly what emailer Kevin said, huh? Then he says, the third part of Uruguay is the endless pampas in the country's interior. It's just pure farmland. There's nothing of interest there once you leave Punta del Este, the beach resorts. Believe me. The country's like Kansas with a seacoast. Dead, flat, and boring. Then he says, on the bright side, there are some interesting, rich, sophisticated people that live around Punta del Este. Most are Argentines that moved across the border for tax or political reasons. Some people move there simply because it's a pleasant place and quiet, though even Punta del Este is a little bit backwards. In fact, the whole country's a little bit backward, which could be a good thing. I guess, he says, that's my excuse for spending time here once in a while. It's a great place to just sit, catch up on reading, research, writing. So if you're looking for nightlife, forget about it. Unless, again, you're in Punta del Este during the season, which is around 3 months. In other words, he says, if you don't know how to amuse yourself, Uruguay's not the country you want to locate to. He says, on the bright side, it's a very low-crime location. In South America, the high-crime countries have always been Brazil, Colombia, and Venezuela. The low-crime countries have always been Argentina, Uruguay, and Chile. And he says, Uruguay, along with Chile, is the least corrupt country in South America. He says, you don't dare try to bribe a cop here. That'd be out of the question, and you'd get in trouble. Hey, wait a minute. Johnny here again. Personally, I kind of like the idea that you can pay the cops off. Sure cuts through the red tape of having to go down, pay a fine, go to court, whatever. I know, it's corrupt and all that, but this is Latin America, and that's the way it is. Besides, in Latin countries, off the Gringo Tourist Trail, $20 is a standard bribe. I mean, come on. In Chicago, I hear it's $50 for jaywalking. And you know, it's not right in your face like, hey, gringo, I want a bribe. No, it's much more kind and subtle. Now, expat Eddie says, just look at it like tipping a waitress at a restaurant. She expects a tip, right? And if you don't give her one, things could get messy. Of course, being pulled over by a cop doesn't mean they're going to hit you for a bribe. Though it's much more common if you're on the Gringo Tourist Trail, where the cops know gringos don't speak Spanish, and they're quick to grease a palm because they really don't know what will happen next if they refuse. And of course, the age-old way to force a bribe out of a stupid gringo is to say that your car paperwork is not in order. But look, if you rent a car, obviously your paperwork's in order. And if you drove one down, it's in order because you made it through a ton of checkpoints and borders. But what are you going to do if a cop pulls you over at one of those mandatory stops, looks at your papers, and says something's wrong with them? If your Spanish sucks, man, you've got no options. But $20 will usually solve everything. Oh, but it won't in Mexico or Costa Rica. It'll probably be more like $100 or $200. But you knew that already. Anyway, Speaking of corruption, this article goes on to say, in Argentina, which is just across the river from Uruguay, it's a completely different story. You could say there that corruption is your friend. So the culture in Uruguay is quite different from that of both Brazil and Argentina, which are at its borders. Then he says they even stiffened up the visa and residency requirements in Uruguay. Typically, all gringos and expats get a 3-month visa to any Latin country. It's automatic. You don't have to apply for it. That means if you want to spend serious time down there, you have to get residency or you'll be popping back and forth all the time to neighboring countries to get the proper passport stamps. But now most Latin countries are tightening up on getting permanent and temporary residency. For example, Uruguay used to have easy requirements, but they've tightened up considerably. And now, to maintain your residency, you must be present in Uruguay at least one day every 4 months. And for some gringos and expats, that's impossible because it's a long, expensive flight from Cleveland, and there's usually an overnight layover. So think of it, every 4 months, that's 3 times a year, you have to pop into the country at least for one day. All right, it's me, John, again. Remember how I talk about Guatemala's temporary and permanent residency? You're still able to maintain it with only one day a year in the country, and it's a short, easy flight. So do keep in mind that countries are tightening the noose on residency requirements. Then he says, by the way, Uruguay, along with Sweden and New Zealand, were the very first socialist countries in the world. He's talking about Fabian or democratic socialism, not communism. If you look it up, you'll see it's pure welfare state-style socialism. And though he says it's not brutal socialism here, like most other types of socialism, but it's still very corrosive to the human spirit. And he says if you're an entrepreneurial gringo, Uruguay is not for you. It's completely out of the question, he says. The place is totally anti-business. For one thing, he says, the regulations are absolutely horrible. It's never-ending papers, forms, and permissions. Plus, the welfare system is so egregious, it's almost impossible to get anyone to do a full day's work here. The unions are set in concrete. They have unyielding, coercive organizations run by opportunistic thugs, which is pretty much what happens with all entrenched unions, you know. Fortunately, he said, they're not violent like the unions in some other countries. To show you how bad things are, 5 years ago, they had no income tax. Then they held a referendum and the people actually voted themselves an income tax. Now, how degraded is a country, he says, where people actually vote to punish themselves like that? Of course, it was sold to the average person by saying, don't worry, only the rich will pay it. But you can guess how that ended up. So as far as income tax, it tops out around 25%. But you've got a 22% VAT tax, that's value-added tax called IVA here, that's tacked onto everything you buy. Of course, the good thing is, like most countries in the world except basically the U.S., they do not tax you on income from a foreign source. As you know, if you live in the U.S., you're forced to pay taxes on all sources. The other thing is, like most governments in Latin America, they tend to leave foreigners, that's gringos and expats, very much alone. So for me, he says, the main reason I live in Uruguay is because it's quiet and peaceful. And it's just across the river from Argentina. But aside from that, there's very little else to attract any expat or gringo. And for now, Uruguay mostly makes its money off of tourism at Punta del Este. And they've got a big agricultural thing going. Though they used to have a thriving financial industry, but the government has totally destroyed it. It's certainly no longer the Switzerland of South America. That's ancient history. And now, even worse, the Uruguayan government is trying to destroy the tourist industry. They recently put a 0.00 alcohol tolerance for driving into effect. So then why go to a nice beach town like Punta del Este in the summer where there's zero tolerance for alcohol? And of course, they put police checkpoints everywhere to enforce it. That means it won't take long before tourism there is dead. Besides that, the beaches are much better in Brazil, and it's a much more liberal climate there. Though, Brazil is noted for its crime, so you take your chances when you go there. But it is beautiful. And as for the Argentines, who are making up around 80% of the people who come to the Punta del Este resort town during the season, they're just going to say, why should I go there anymore? If they're on vacation and can't even drink one single drink without being nailed while driving, they'd rather go to Brazil or even Miami. So yes, the tourist industry is being killed. Even worse, Uruguay is probably the most anti-smoking country in the world, even more so than Canada. And believe me, Latinos like to smoke. Then he says, talk about expensive. In Punta del Este, which only has people less than half of the year, there are hundreds of apartments that are empty during the slow season. And they're typically paying, get this, around $3,000 a month in condo fees and taxes just to keep the building going. It's extremely expensive. So why would anyone buy a condo there? It's basically for Argentines to get their money offshore into something that's solid and real, as opposed to a bank account or putting their money into Argentine real estate. You know, Argentina's on the verge of bankruptcy again, and they've got 25% inflation. So the wealthy are trying to get their money out. Then it says Argentines are now finding out they can't even hide their money in Uruguay anymore because Uruguayans have killed financial privacy. In fact, it's no longer possible at all there. In fact, it's barely possible in the rest of the world unless you use an SA corporation. Next, the government will surely try to kill the agriculture industry. They've done it everywhere else. Then he says, most politicians in Montevideo are ex-communists from the 70s. They all believe in socialist ideas, and now they're working on destroying the real estate business too, through transfer taxes, notary and stamp charges, all kinds of fees stacked up on top of each other, making it very expensive to buy or sell any property. In fact, he says, the real estate market is so bad here, everything's for sale. If you want to buy something, by the way, offer them half, and they'll probably take it. All right, meet Johnny again. What an eye-opener, huh? Oh, and by the way, he was talking about unions before. You heard me mention in a recent show that Panama unions are so strong, especially in the construction sector, that just last month, the construction unions shut down throughout the whole country. Every single construction project was stopped. What they wanted, of course, were pay raises, and they got them. That'd be reason number 226 why I don't recommend Panama as an expat Plan B destination. Though, of course, some people like it, but they're mostly the people that got there a long time ago. Those who have settled in nicely. But if you're a newbie coming in, lots of problems, and it's getting to be quite expensive too. All right, we're near the end now, and I have to mention that I've got a couple more places left in my July 2018 Expat Insider Seminar in and around Guatemala. Volcano notwithstanding, it won't affect us a bit. In fact, we'll have a look. This is probably the last time I'm going to mention this seminar because we're kicking off in about 3 weeks now, but you can still get in. So just go to www.thenewexpat.com and click on Johnny's seminar link. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy. Nos vemos.